You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 173. Today's show is all about Mardi Gras. It's become somewhat of an annual tradition to have Arthur Hardy on to discuss all things carnival and Mardi Gras. The last show was about tech and entrepreneurship in New Orleans. We talked about an incubator called the Idea Village and an annual conference called New Orleans Entrepreneur Week that kind of combines technology, entrepreneurship, and the culture of New Orleans. It's really kind of a unique thing, so if you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. First up is Sunset Chasers. If you need help planning a trip to New Orleans or elsewhere, contact my partners at Sunset Chasers. I used to offer a travel planning service, but I had to give it up as my kids have gotten older, and I really struggled with trying to find someone that had kind of the same vibe and same feel as I do, and I think I found them in Mallory and Allison over at Sunset Chasers. They can help you plan a trip to New Orleans or to anywhere else. And speaking of which, by the time you hear this, it's going to be early January 2023, and now's the time to book a cruise vacation if you're interested. Whether you want to sail the Mediterranean, the Caribbean, or even the Mississippi River, which is something I'm going to do one of these days and do a podcast about it, Sunset Chasers Travel Agency is your go-to. Schedule a call and book before March 31st, 2023 and receive a $200 onboard credit per cabin, plus a $15 off their plan as you go. In addition, if you mention code BEYOND15, you save the 15%. The call is free. They'll talk to you. Even if you decide that it's not a good fit, you'll get some tips on planning a trip. And again, if you do use their services, they are really affordable and actually charge less than what I used to charge several years back. So they're a good fit. I would love to hear any feedback when you do use them. Mallory and Allison are New Orleanians. Two New Orleanians sitting here in a moment going to talk. It certainly makes a difference when you're planning your trip to New Orleans, but they are able to help you with other planning as well. Support also comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum and located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. I honestly think they don't promote it enough. It's a combination blog and online exhibit space at hnoc.org/firstdraft. And I think it's really one of the cool things to come out. Look, there's not a lot of good things that come out of COVID, but they really tried to figure out how to reimagine themselves when people couldn't visit. And First Draft is one of the products of that. It's really a neat space. They're constantly updating it. If you are here, it's a great thing to check out. Back on October 20th of 2022 and running through January 22nd, so by the time you hear this, you'll have 2 weeks, they are presenting an exhibit entitled The Spanish New Orleans and the Caribbean. While we call it the original city, the French Quarter, there's an amazing amount of Spanish influence here. The exhibit has more than 125 pieces from the Historic New Orleans Collection's own collection, as well as other museums in the United States and Spain. We did a whole episode on it back in episode 168. They also have this really terrific, in fact, it's mentioned in the Mardi Gras guide we're going to talk about. They have this really terrific immersive exhibit right now about Notre Dame Cathedral in France. It's a traveling exhibit. You go to the Historic New Orleans Collection, you get a tablet, and you're able to virtually walk around the cathedral through history. It's updated every few days, too, so you can see the renovations they're making in near real time. It's one of the most unique museum exhibits I think you'll see anywhere. So go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. And last up, before we jump in, I want to mention that today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst, as well as in the show notes. We have perks at all levels, and I'm about to refresh that. And if you join at the $10 level or higher, we'll mention you on an episode. And you typically also receive a copy of the Mardi Gras guide we're going to talk about. All right, look, let's jump in. Couple things. First of all, you're going to hear some background noise. We do this in City Park, and we are doing it at the back end of something called Celebration in the Oaks. And so there are a lot of families out here enjoying the park, probably getting ready for Celebration in the Oaks. I grew up running around in this area. My guest's kids, if not him as well, grew up running around in this area. I'm joined by the person who probably knows more about Carnival and Mardi Gras in New Orleans than anyone else. He's the publisher of an annual Mardi Gras guide and is just out with his 47th consecutive edition. Welcome back to the show, Arthur. How are you?
Happy to be here, Mark, and happy to have the magazine out. You remember last year we didn't come out to mid-January thanks to COVID and truck driver strikes and all kind of stuff trying to get magazines from the printer, but it's out. It's out early. Got it out right before Christmas and just happy to be here. And how about all this action in City Park?
Huh? Right? Isn't that something?
It's great to see.
On the one hand, I was concerned about the background noise, but there was a period of time when City Park was just kind of dead.
It was.
And it's really rejuvenated
in the
last
few
years.
It's come back. We did the Celebration of the Oaks early December with my two grandkids, one of whom's like 9 weeks old, and it was an experience. Yeah. We did the walking tour, but it was wonderful, just wonderful.
Yeah, it's good to see. And the other thing, Arthur's been on the show more than anybody else. He's also been on enough times that we have watched the space that we're sitting next to go from Café Du Monde to Morning Call to
True.
Café Du Monde.
Right, right, that's right.
So it has switched back and forth. But you can get the kids all amped up on the powdered sugar and the beignets and then let them run around a little bit.
Not right just here, the kids. This gave me a little afternoon boost, let me tell you.
So, again, you know, I want to talk about Carnival and Mardi Gras, of course, but I want to talk a little bit about the magazine. 47 years.
Trying to make it to year 50. I don't know if I will. I'll be about 112 years old by then. But, I enjoy what I do, Mark. I really do. It's a lot of fun and get a lot of positive feedback. A few complaints every now and then, but mostly good stuff. And it's very gratifying. It really is. And I enjoy it.
I think this year is really neat. I was lucky enough to get some of the first copies. You have a ton, and I know I saw you just gave away the copy you had in your hand
to
somebody that walked by and recognized you. So you're welcome to take this if you want. But you got a big variety this year in terms of coverage.
We try each year to, you know, there's certain, I wouldn't call them agendas, but certain things you have to have. We have a parade section that gives a profile of each parade, where they're going to go, a map, what they're going to throw, king, queen, celebrities, and all. But that's only about a third of the book. The rest are feature stories. And because new people come to Mardi Gras every year, you have to repeat some things, a little history and terminology and things like that. But really, the book's about 90% new each year. And that's become a challenge, finding new things and new old things that, you know, my dream is always that when somebody picks up the magazine, they'll say, you know, I've been here all my life and I didn't know this. Or, yeah, I remember that. And so we try to do a little of both. This year, there are about 15 crews having anniversaries.
Yeah.
And we covered them as best we could. But we have some other fun stuff in there. But it's always a challenge to try to make it interesting. And I always ask myself, would I care about this? If I don't, I'm not going to put it in my magazine.
Yeah, I take kind of the same thing with the podcast. You know,
yeah.
My barometer is my mom.
Yeah.
If I can come up with something in each episode that she says, I didn't know that, that's pretty good.
Sure, right? Sure. Or I hadn't thought about that in 30 years.
Exactly.
Glad you brought it back. You know, we have an expression in New Orleans called ain't there no more.
That's right.
There's so many things that we've lost through the years. So we try to bring back some of those memories. But I think we're going to have a good year. This will be, I believe, a return to pre-pandemic Mardi Gras in terms of quality and quantity. Actually, we have more parades than ever. The sad part is we still have shortened parade routes as of early January. That could possibly change. We're hoping. We'll see. But in general, the hotels should be full this year. They weren't last year. It's going to be back to as normal as Mardi Gras can be.
Yeah. Well, let's get into it, and we'll jump kind of back and forth to the book, as there are things that you mentioned in the book and
uh-huh.
or the magazine. And I don't want to give it away. I want you to buy the magazine. But you kind of hit a couple of things. But first of all, just a recap for people that maybe haven't heard any of the four or five episodes you and I have done. Real briefly, what's the difference between Carnival and Mardi Gras?
We really use the terms interchangeably, you know, and,
yeah.
I do, and I know better.
Yeah.
Carnival is a season. Mardi Gras is a day. Mardi Gras is French for Fat Tuesday, the single day. Carnival is a season that begins on January 6th, 12th night, and ends on Fat Tuesday. And the season can be as short as 28 days or as long as 63, depending upon the date of Fat Tuesday. And there's a big formula. It goes 46 days before Easter, spring equinox, all kind of crazy stuff.
Right.
You get lost in the explanation. But the good thing to know is that it starts on January 6th and ends on Fat Tuesday, whenever that happens to be.
Yep. And this year we kind of have a middle-of-the-road season. Mardi Gras is in later February, not super late.
February 21st. It can be as early as February 3rd or as late as March 9th. So
yeah.
This is towards the back end, you'd say.
Yeah, yeah. That means more king cake.
Oh, yeah.
So that kind of gets me to, you know, how does Carnival kick off? We have now two or three crews or organizations that kick us off.
Yeah, well, on King's Day, or 12th night, January 6th, it really begins in the morning at 10 o'clock. The mayor has a press conference at Mardi Gras World, and all the crews are there and saying, hey, it's open. Here it begins. And then that night, there's a Joan of Arc foot parade in the French Quarter. There are three streetcar parades. So there's a lot of activity. Purists like myself will not eat king cake until King's Day, the 6th, although it's awfully tempting, I've got to tell you, to do it before
yes.
then. And that tradition has just grown and grown. I mean, probably 500,000 king cakes are shipped out of state to expatriates, and I don't know how many are eaten locally, but I'll put a dent into it. I'll do my share, I can promise you.
Same here. Both of those traditions, the parades on January 6th, it used to just be the Funny 40 Fellows and Joan of Arc. Now we have a couple of other streetcar parades behind them. I think that's a good thing.
Because it is.
The
more the merrier. There's enough for everybody, you know, and that's the neat thing about Mardi Gras is you can do your own thing, you know, within limits as long as it's legal and, you know, in somewhat good taste,
right.
Although some organizations kind of
push that edge,
a little bit. But in general, you know, we know the celebration's family-friendly and wholesome and remarkably safe.
Mm-hmm. And Funny 40 Fellows is a fun way to kick off Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a complaint about it, it was that, particularly when the kids were younger, it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's on a streetcar.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, and they occupy one, sometimes two streetcars.
Mm-hmm.
I think the addition of the other ones has been helpful. Because
now,
of a sudden you got a little bit more. There's
But it's still a streetcar and they pass
quick.
Pretty quickly, you know, but they kind of herald or trumpet, if you will, the opening of the carnival season. And I'm riding this year with Funny 40 Fellows.
I've heard that.
I haven't done that in a long time, since maybe the first year, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I hear you're going to have a special stop, actually.
Yes, we are. I was honored by your alma mater, Brother Martin High School, where I've taught for 16 years. They've named a scholarship in my name for band students that have some financial need, and there's kind of a kickoff fundraiser event at the home of a former Brother Martin student, a doctor, St. Charles Avenue. So I'll get off the streetcar at that point, and all I drink is non-alcoholic beer, but I plan to bring at least a case for that night.
I am very excited about that. Longtime listeners will know that the way you and I first connected is that you were my high school band director at Brother Martin in your early days of
the early 1900s.
In the early days of the of the magazine.
That's right.
I like to think that it was my poor clarinet play that decided to push you towards, you know, I got to get out of this business and do this full time. But I'm excited for that.
It's going to be fun.
And that gets to, you know, an essential part of Mardi Gras are the marching groups, which is something that's really come in the last several years, and certainly after Katrina, but the bands have always played a huge role.
Absolutely, since the very beginning. And, you know, there have been a couple of years when, because of rain, the police said the floats can roll and bands can't.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about dull.
Yeah.
You know, they more than break up space and time between floats. They're really an essential part of the parade, and a Mardi Gras parade without bands really is rather dull.
It is. And you don't realize it until
they're
don't
not
see
there.
It.
Yeah,
right?
Ain't there no more.
And obviously you and I marched in many, many parades over the years. It's a lot of work for the kids. It's a lot of work for the directors. It's also a moneymaker for the schools.
It
I'm not sure people realize that.
Bands are paid, although not as much of a moneymaker as people would think.
No.
Because uniforms get dirty and have to be cleaned. Instruments could get damaged. If a clarinet gets rained on, that's a no-no. Buses, transportation costs money. I think I figured out once, if we assessed each child $10 to not march, we'd make more money. But it's fun. And
it
the exposure you get in one Mardi Gras parade is, you know, 100 times of what you'd see in a football game or certainly a concert. So,
yeah.
And I think the kids like it.
Yeah, I certainly have great memories of doing it.
Yeah, me too.
You know, despite the, you know, it's tiring. It's a long day, long evening.
It absolutely is.
The other thing I wanted to mention, and you touched on, is king cakes. It feels like, certainly when I was growing up, I'm sure when you were growing up, we had basically one king cake. We had McKenzie's, and then later we had Haydell's and Gambino's, Randazzo's. So those have actually been around a while. But we had 4, 5, 6 king cake bakeries.
That was it,
right?
Yeah.
We probably have 4 or 5 dozen now.
Oh, there's no doubt.
You have the rise of something called the King Cake Hub in the last couple of years.
Which is really neat. They collect king cakes from, I think, a couple of dozen vendors now.
Yep.
So you can go there and shop, get whatever you want by going to one place instead of 24.
Yeah. Our good friend Will Samuel passed away in the last year.
Wasn't that a tragedy?
Yeah. Like, just such an energetic, good human being.
And innovative and willing to take risks. You know, when he first came up with this concept, people said, are you crazy?
Right.
It's not going to work. And yes, it did.
He did. He had to move it around several times.
Yeah.
It's now at Zony Mash, which is a great little brewery in the Broadmoor area. But he had this idea. You're right. And people were like, who's going to go to one place?
And his wife Jennifer's doing it now and doing it well. So
yeah. So that is something that you mentioned. I eat a lot of king cake as well, but you have more choice than you've ever had before.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm a purist. I tend to like my king cakes fairly simple, but there's a king cake festival. There's, there's so many varieties of king cake. And I think that's been a good thing. That's been a good innovation, a good opportunity, again, for bakeries to get some exposure.
Indeed. And there was a feature in the Picayune a few days ago on a Boudin king cake, which I will not try.
I have had that before.
Have you? Not for me, buddy.
Not my favorite. I have had a king cake with a hamburger in it.
Oh, my God. No.
That the Mackle brothers, I was on the judging panel for the King Cake Festival. The Mackle brothers swore to me it was good.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. It was unbelievable. I don't, really? Something about the salt and the sweet.
Oh, no.
It was, I couldn't believe it, but it was good.
That is something coming from the Mackle brothers. This is a team that works at WDSU TV Channel 6. The brothers, twins, have been there forever.
Yeah.
And a couple of crazy guys.
Yes.
Good guys.
Again, Brother Martin guys.
Yep.
I did want to mention, we were talking about the bands, and one of the other things you highlight in the book, or in the magazine this year, I keep saying book, I'm the one with the book, you're the one with the magazine, is you guys have an article about the Baby Dolls. And in some ways, the post-Katrina marching crews, marching organizations, sort of have their roots in the Baby Dolls.
Yeah, they do. This group really started in the 20s and 30s of black women. Some say women of loose morals, perhaps, but dressed as baby dolls and walked around town, and they've resurrected that tradition now. I think the women who have participated now are a bit more refined, shall we say, and from all walks of life. But it's another element of Mardi Gras that you mentioned, the Mardi Gras, the marching groups in general. The Muses Parade, female parade, has a lot to do with that. When they started, they invited new dance groups to participate in the parade. And I think the whole theory behind it was, you don't have to be 18 years old and busty and in shape to have fun and be a part of the Mardi Gras parade. So almost all of these female groups are middle-aged women, some of them not in the best of shape. But, hey, we want to have fun, too.
Right.
And they do. And there's so many groups now. We cover them in the magazine. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, 3 or 4 dozen now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them with some kind of raunchy names. But, again, it's fun and it's participatory. And it's, I think, diversified Mardi Gras, to where everybody has a spot. You don't need to fit into this little box, to a stereotypical whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm in. I'm in, baby.
Without a doubt. And it also lessens it's expensive to ride.
Yeah.
It's expensive, period. It is very expensive in some of the bigger organizations with when we had longer routes and the kind of expectation of the throws. And maybe you don't want to ride, but you want to participate,
exactly.
Right? And there really is something for men and women alike.
Yep.
There's the Elvi. There's the guys in the smoking lounge chairs.
Yeah,
there's
the laissez-bois.
Yeah.
Of course, you got the 6'10 stompers.
Right.
And so it's not just women. It's grown-up men, too, that have fun kind of making fun of themselves, you know.
Well, and you mentioned in the magazine, of course, even on the cover art, which is always amazing. I don't know if you want to give a plug to the person
David,
that
David
does
Johnson,
it.
David Johnson, our amazing art director. He's been with us since 1991, and I think we won 6 last Press Club Awards for the best illustration.
They're just always, like, you think, gosh, 47 years, how's it going to...
Well, it gets harder, let me tell you, to come up with something. But yeah, we're real proud of the cover this year. It's basically like a bulletin board with pieces of memorabilia from a couple of dozen different parades, plus a list of all the parades this year. And we decided to do something new and put the year they first marched.
Yeah, which I love.
So it starts with Rex in 1872 and ends with a couple of new parades from 2022. It's 3, actually. So kind of proud of that, different. And I don't know what we're going to do next year, Mark. Maybe you can help.
Yeah. What I love about that, though, is because the book, the magazine, I gotta, whatever, I keep saying that. The magazine, there are so many organizations this year with big anniversaries.
Yes.
That it kind of sets the tone for it.
It really does.
And as I was looking through it, I was thinking, you know, it's interesting we're having this discussion about the marching crews. I wonder if you would agree with me on this, but I think Muses probably brought the most innovation to carnival parades probably since Orpheus, or I might even argue Endymion, with the substance of change they brought to them.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be far off the mark there with it, with that statement. The whole foundation of Muses is kind of an interesting story. There hadn't been a successful female parade that rolled in New Orleans on a weeknight. Weekends, a couple, not many. Daytime, a few, not many. But the captain and founder of the cruise, attorney Stacy Rosenberg, basically came in and said, we can do this. And most of the good old boys says, and she basically said, get out the way. And just blew the walls down, you know. It was successful from the very first year. A lot of innovations, and since then, and to their credit, they have not tried to be the biggest crew. They've capped their membership. We don't want to be the biggest. We got what we need. Everything's cool. And they do their own thing. And I love it.
And I think they have elevated crews like Iris. Mm-hmm. Now, Iris is 100 years old.
Yep.
Over 100 years old. Iris is on a Saturday. I think for people that are listening, Muses is an all-female crew.
At night.
At night, on a weeknight. Didn't have that before. Their floats are gorgeous. They are known for decorating shoes. Kind of an ode to the coconut of Zulu, I would say. Yep. Since then, there's been all kinds of imitations of it.
Signature and throw, sure.
Sure. My theory on this is when they were successful and then they capped and the waiting list got very long, women who wanted to participate started to look at some of these other crews like Iris and said, hey, you know, we don't want to wait. We're going to join.
Yep.
And I think, in my opinion, the quality of an Iris parade has grown exponentially.
Well, and not just the quality, but the quantity. This year, they lead all crews with like 3,600 members, you know.
It's a long parade.
It's just amazing.
Right.
And a beautiful parade. And There's something for everybody in Mardi Gras, and you don't have to be big to be grand. You know, there's some small parades that are simply wonderful. My favorite night, I'm careful never to declare a best or, you know, favorite parade, but is Lundi Gras, Monday night, because you've got Proteus, which started in 1882 with its ancient floats and flambeau, followed by Orpheus, you know, from the 90s, all the innovations, you know. It's just three centuries of history on the street in front of you. And, you know, it's a long aside, but through another philanthropic effort I was involved in, I became friends with Sandra Bullock. Of course, she was good friends with Harry Connick Jr., having been in a movie together. She rented a private reviewing stand on St. Charles Avenue and invited me to see the Orpheus Parade with her. And it just so happened that the captain's float with Harry was on happened to stop just completely accidentally right in front of the balcony. It was there for about 30 minutes. We had this wonderful love fest going back and forth. And, you know, even celebrities ride in parades sometimes. But to see them and with their kids seeing a parade from the perspective of a parade viewer and not a parade celebrity, it's just amazing. You know, and she enjoyed that and the Proteus Parade, which my alma mater, Warren Easton High School, was marching in. That's the school she adopted.
Yep. Right.
So they stopped the parade and played for her. And it was just a really swell evening, but it's just neat to see. This celebration cuts across all boundaries. No matter who you are, there's something for you. And if you can't enjoy it, you know, I tell people, check your pulse. You know, you might not be alive.
Yeah, it really is. I think in many ways, being in the street at a Mardi Gras parade is a great equalizer. You can be in the Garden District, you know, with some of the most expensive homes and all of that, and you're standing on a street corner with people of all economic backgrounds, all ethnicities, people you may never come into contact with any other place, you know, in your daily life. And for that day or that night, your family, you know, you're watching out for each other's kids, you're taking care of each other, you're sharing food, you're sharing a beer, all that stuff. Yeah. And it just happens organically.
It does.
And it's amazing because obviously we do have crime in the city and you hear about that and you alluded to it. Yet Mardi Gras consistently, we certainly have our tragedies, but consistently is pretty darn safe given the amount of people and the movement and all of the chaos.
It really is, and I'm amazed that there haven't been more incidents, actually. But the greatest fear is, you know, being hit by a float.
Yeah.
These things can't stop on a dime.
Right.
And so you have to be careful.
Yep.
In general, there have been very few incidents, and I think we've been lucky, and let's hope that luck continues.
Yeah. Well, a couple more questions for you. So we're in City Park. They have a mini train that I remember riding as a kid. It's coming by right now. So I get asked this question, and I didn't put it in my book. What are the minimum requirements for an organization to parade?
Depends on the parish.
And so let's talk about New Orleans.
In New Orleans, you have to have a minimum of 14 floats and 7 marching bands. I'm actually not sure of the other parishes, but I think it's probably pretty similar to that. But then you get into the definitions of what is a float. Is, is a mini float with one rider on it count, or how many riders? But in general, a poor parade will last 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the membership...
It's not feasible.
It's a self-destructive... I don't know what you call it, but people want to be a part of a successful organization. If people don't come see your parade, why would you want to ride in it? If the government's spending money to put police out there and you don't meet minimum standards, why would they spend that money? So it doesn't take long for the cream to come to the top.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a cliche, but it's true. And that doesn't mean you have to be a big parade to be good, but we don't need bad parades.
Right, and we've seen parades fall out, and I don't want to get into the controversy, but I ask you that because I have lots of people that ask about a certain parade that has fallen way off, and we'll see if they survive or they, you know, but if they have a permit and they meet the requirements, they can parade. You mentioned at the start, there's a couple parades that started in 2022, off to good starts, it seems like.
And we have two new ones in 23, one in Slidell across the lake, and the Legion of Mars, which has paraded with the crew of Allah, with the crew of Ferret, then back to Allah. They're on their own now. Be the first new parade in Orleans in an awfully long time. And seem to have some good financial backing. It's militarily based. They're going to be honoring veterans, first responders, and I'm predicting big things from them.
Yeah, they've done a good job tagging on to or partnering with other parades as they could kind of get their feet under them.
Now they're on their own.
Yeah. So
and it should be, they're parading on the first Saturday of Mardi Gras. And that, you know, that first weekend has become bigger than Mardi Gras weekend. And it's a, I wish more visitors were aware of how special that weekend is, quantity and quality wise. And you don't have as much traffic. You don't have as many visitors. You don't have, the hotel rooms aren't full. I don't know what the rates are that weekend. I would suspect they're less than Mardi Gras weekend.
Right.
But it's like, I wouldn't even call it Mardi Gras light, but but it's a calmer experience. And it's grown, really, quality and quantity-wise.
Well, and that's a tip I mentioned in my book about that first weekend. It is sort of a good introduction to Carnival.
Especially for kids.
If you're not quite sure, you know, and you're a little nervous and you have kids, and you're right, the quality of it has gone way up.
Yeah.
And it's busy. I mean, it used to be sort of sleepy. It's not that anymore.
Oh, no, not at all.
But at the same time, you're not dealing with the crowds of a Bacchus or an Endymion or a Muses or an Orpheus or that, or certainly Mardi Gras Day. It's not empty, but it's a good weekend. One other thing that's interesting, I have called around a little bit and talked to some hotel managers. When you book a hotel for Mardi Gras, you're booking it for several days. There's a minimum 3 to 5 days, depending on the hotel, actually. And most of the hotels that I contacted on the first weekend, there's not a minimum.
Really?
So that's also interesting if you're coming in. You know, Mardi Gras can be expensive if you're, you know, you like to talk about it as the greatest free show on earth, which it is for us New Orleanians.
Yeah.
But if you're coming in town and you had a book and, you know, food
but
all that stuff.
But the point is, though, we don't, we being the city, don't charge you for Mardi Gras.
So that's right.
Free, it's free to
that's
the
right.
It's certainly not free to the people who put on the show, the float riders. I mean, I have several friends that spend more than $1,000 on throws and think nothing of it.
Yep.
Plus their dues.
Right.
Which can be $1,000 or more.
Right.
It's a lot of money that goes on to put this greatest free show on earth. And, and you know, people ask me, why, as a business model, why do you do this? I mean, this doesn't make sense, really.
Right.
You know, we're going to dress you up and put a mask on you so nobody knows who you are, and you got to give $1,000 worth of goodies to strangers. You know, who does this? We do.
I just believe so much that it is not only part of the fabric of New Orleans, which it clearly is, but I think it influences the way we interact with people. Mm-hmm. I think it's that shared experience in the street. You know, it is the tossing things. It's that there is so much that's family-oriented. There's so much that's tradition-oriented. And all of that bleeds through the rest of the culture in New Orleans.
It does.
Know?
I wish that brotherhood and good spirit we see on parade routes could last the whole year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because the same guy who will give you grandchild a pair of beads, you see on the street, and you have road rage because he cut you off. You
right.
know, come on, let's just chill and let's pretend it's Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I don't know what the statistics are on this, but it's a pretty peaceful time in the city. Like, peaceful seems silly to say because it's also chaotic. But in terms of, it's pretty well.
It's self-controlled.
Yeah,
it really is.
It is.
I mean, of course,
that's a good
police,
way to put it.
But you'll see. If somebody's acting a fool, you'll see people across it. Come
people
on,
will
man,
take care of
cut
it.
That crap.
You know, yeah.
We don't do that here. All right, I'm sorry. You know, I see that often.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I've told the story before, but I've worked for the three major television stations in New Orleans during my life. And when I was with CBS, WWL, we had a reviewing stand on Canal Street. We're elevated so we could see things. We also had a police radio. And we heard there was a guy in the crowd that had a pistol in his pants and his belt, you know, tucked in. And so they were going to take the guy down. And they had two plainclothes officers and one officer dressed as a clown. And they just circled this guy and just moved him to the side and took the gun away from him. And he wasn't going to do anything bad. He just happened to have a gun. And, you know, I thought about in other cities, if a policeman had pulled a gun and said, you know, freeze or I'll shoot, you might have had an accident. But
sure.
Our police was so cool. Nobody ever knew we could see it.
Right.
But nobody else did. No harm, no foul, you know.
I do think it is, for all the valid criticisms of the police force here in New Orleans, I think they do a great job with Mardi Gras. It does get me to an issue that's been sort of a thorny issue. You alluded to it earlier, is the shortening of the routes.
Yeah, big mistake.
Yeah.
You know, because we have a reduced police force, the thinking is that the shorter the route, the more you can stretch with few police you have. But it puts more people in a short amount of space, which is, in my mind, not conducive to, it doesn't enhance public safety.
No.
And it made no sense during the pandemic when we're supposed to be practicing social distancing.
Right.
You know? But long parade routes or have a history of their own tradition, and when you shorten a route, you really change the whole nature of the celebration for the rider and the neighborhoods and the businesses along that parade route that count on those parade nights for a lot of income, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping we can find a way to restore parade routes, and I think we can. I really do.
You know, the one that gets talked about the most is Toth.
Yeah.
Toth is a parade that, you're the expert. Yeah. I should let you talk about Toth.
It's called the Crew of Shut-Ins. For 75 years, they've paraded in front of institutions where people cannot go out to see a parade, so we bring the parade to them. And 33 blocks were cut out of their route, and those were the blocks that housed these institutions. And, you know, we really need to get that parade back. It's who they are.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. It's called Toth Sunday.
Yeah,
even though there are other parades that day, and yeah, it goes by Children's Hospital.
Yep.
And that whole, for gosh, a decade or so, we have enjoyed this longer route with a piece of Magazine Street,
yep.
which has become, in my opinion, the most family-friendly part.
Oh, it is.
Part,
it's a neighborhood parade, yeah.
And doesn't really require that much policing because it's so family-friendly.
Yeah, it is.
From my lens, having done it both ways, on Magazine Street and further down on St. Charles, you're right. The shortening of those routes, what you're doing is almost creating a powder keg. You're taking the difficult parts of the crowds and the parking and the inebriation, and you're shoving all of that into a tighter space.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
So what's the answer? The answer is we've got to import police from other jurisdictions, and we have to figure out a way to pay for them, and it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the organizations have the money that they could hire them if the city would allow it. So I'm still hoping there might be a solution.
Yeah. I also think that gets to what we don't have anymore are neighborhood parades.
Right.
And we may never see them again. There's some. And you mentioned like Slidell, some of the neighboring parishes. I would consider those neighborhood parades. But even in my lifetime and certainly in yours, Carrollton was in Carrollton and Mid-City was in Mid-City and Hercules and Gentilly
and
New Orleans East.
Was in New Orleans East. And some people may not remember this, but Okeanos Parade used to start on St. Claude Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So we've lost that, but the new pre-COVID standardized route still has almost, it's kind of replaced that. Mm-hmm. It's convenient for the police, convenient for the parade viewer. You know, it's a new tradition, and now yep. we've lost part of that. So my fear, and the fear of most parade captains, is this going to be permanent?
Yeah.
The longer it goes, the more permanent it's likely to become.
Yeah.
Let's hope we can be smart enough to figure out a way to return it to its full glory.
Yeah. So that maybe gets to, I was going to ask you, gosh, we're getting, there's a whole gaggle of people behind us, but that's all right. You know, I was going to ask you kind of the things you're concerned about, and you've mentioned that, the yep. routes. What are you excited about this year?
I think the feeling that it's going to be close to pre-pandemic, the increased membership in crews is just incredible. I mean, you know, the economy is still not all that good, and yet I'm getting reports from several crew captains. They're out of throat. They can't order any more throats. Mm. They can't get them in time. They're sold out of everything. There's just this pent-up enthusiasm for, come on, let's go.
And then my other question, I was thinking about this as I was reading through the magazine today. You mentioned Lundy Gras, and it's a really interesting juxtaposition with Proteus and Orpheus.
Orpheus, yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to ride an Orpheus a couple times and experience that. But my question to you is, if you could go back in time and the members that rode in the 1870s and 80s and 90s, would they recognize the parades today?
I think they would. As you know, they would understand that they had evolved, certainly. But it's the same model that Comus had in 1857 with the first parade is here. It's extended. It's renovations, a lot of changes. But, yeah, I think they would.
Yeah.
I really do.
I mean, you get a glimpse of that now when you think about Proteus
yep.
rolling, right? And
yep.
and using the base of those floats that are really, really old
yeah.
wrecks. Several of them.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
You use the old platforms.
It's a then and now. And thankfully, it's evolved. I mean, you know, at one time, Mardi Gras was very elitist, but so was society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the haves and the have-nots, the space was a lot deeper than it is now. And I don't know if I would be that enamored with Mardi Gras if it was still just controlled by old white men, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, we talk about inclusiveness and diversity. Name another celebration in the world better than Mardi Gras that is so inclusive. I mean, my mm-hmm. God, it's something. You've got all male crews, female crews, co-ed crews, gay crews. I mean, black, white, mixed. If you can't find a place, you're not trying.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. You know, for there's certainly, in New Orleans, I think race is always an issue and has always, you know, has such deep roots and obviously the backbone of slavery and the foundation of the city
sure.
and the country and all of that. But you think back to the first Mardi Gras Indians appearing, and then you think about Zulu. And then you're right. We had a period that was very stagnant in terms of that and very not inclusive.
Yeah.
And many of the things we've talked about today, whether it's kind of the resurrection of the baby dolls or the marching crews or Muses or Legion of Mars, it seems like we are, if there's a one of the positive, I shouldn't say if there, one of the positives about Carnival is every year lately it seems to become more and more inclusive.
Well, especially now with these alternative parades, that mm-hmm. preseason parades like Chewbacca's,
yeah.
Bohem, I mean, Petite Rex, you know, mm-hmm. miniature float. I mean, there's, again, you can participate at some level without having to have a lot of money or belong to a club.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, come on down, do your thing. And it's so welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of these new alternative parades are populated by people who aren't from here.
Right.
But they came in and said, hey, could we do this? Go ahead.
Yep.
Why not? And if it takes, it does. And it has.
The episode I'm going to record tomorrow is with three New Orleanians who are quote unquote new. They have been here 4 or 5 years each. And as I'm thinking about it, they all have joined various Mardi Gras organizations. Crew of Red Beans, for
yep,
instance.
There you go. Yep.
Really innovative.
Sure.
Taking beans and decorating suits in the style of Mardi Gras
so
Indians.
So creative, right? And artistic and fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got to be fun and creativity like you can't imagine. I'm looking at a beautiful swan in the lagoon here at City Park. This is a great place to be, isn't
it? It's a great place. Yeah, the light is fading here, but this is a fabulous place. Let's see, you've kind of mentioned some of the concerns about the routes and the... Are there any trends that you see? Maybe it is what we've been talking about, the inclusivity. Are there trends that you see as you look at this
show? Every crew now has to have a signature throw. And that's good for the people in that business. I wish I could come up with something. You know. And again, that's another great thing about Mardi Gras. It's capitalism, free enterprise at its best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody owns Mardi Gras, so if you want to come up with a better magazine than mine, go ahead. Nobody can stop you. Nobody can give you permission. A podcast, a book. You know,
right. Yeah, there can't be an official. There's no official poster. There's no official anything.
So go to it, you know, mm-hmm. and I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get a little tired of the signature throws only because my kids don't want to get rid of them. Right? I can usually convince them to get rid of the beads.
You're right.
But
I've got some Muse's shoes I wouldn't dare part with because they're pieces of art, you know.
They really are. Unfortunately, we have about 12 of them, and we have about 20 pairs of Iris sunglasses, and, you know, we need a bigger house just to store the Mardi Gras stuff. So, that, you know, if there's a downside, maybe that's it. One thing you mentioned I want to circle back to, and maybe because I was looking for it, it's highlighted in the magazine this year. We spend most of the time, you and I, talking about Mardi Gras as if it is carnival season, parade season, as if it's just in New Orleans. But mm-hmm. but it's so much more than that.
It's all over the state. We have a very progressive Lieutenant Governor, Billy Nungesser, who has put Louisiana floats in both the Macy's Parade and the Rose Parade. And we partnered with him to have a little section in the magazine, Mardi Gras Across the State. And I think we've got, I don't know, maybe 24 different parishes. But it's everywhere. And mm-hmm. and it's different wherever it is, not here.
Right.
But it's still fun and still family-oriented. And it's grown. And we don't own it, you know.
Right.
I think ours is the best and biggest. And all that people in Mobile would disagree. But that's okay, too. You know,
right.
It belongs to everybody. It's like Christmas. But I'm glad to see the expansion into other parishes. It's really neat.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for years, people in Jefferson Parish, you know, don't want to come to New Orleans or vice versa. One of the, I don't think it's an article, I think it's an ad in your magazine, talks about the celebration, I'm drawing a blank, but the family girl.
Family girl, yeah, sure.
In Lafreniere Park.
Yeah, it's not Lafreniere Park. It's actually on by the Clearview Shopping Center.
Okay.
And I'm wrong, it moved back to the Causeway. Right across from Lakeside.
It's been in all of those places, in fairness.
Yeah, it is. But it's a concert weekend that coincides with the parades that end or pass there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a new element, I think, to promote tourism in the parish, and mm-hmm. it appears to be working. They have not, as we talk here, they have not announced their headliners yet.
Right.
But they normally bring in some really good talent.
Mm-hmm. They do. And again, it's kind of different thing to do. If
you
come in, maybe you've been to Mardi Gras a bunch, you want to see something different, I think it's worth seeing. If you ever get the chance to go to Cajun Mardi Gras, out near Lafayette. It's a completely different experience.
I've never seen it. I've written about it and read about it and have pictures of it, but I'm always working on television here, so I can't be in two places at once. I've been trying to get Channel 8 to send me to the Rio Carnival, but
there you go.
they won't buy a ticket. So.
Yeah. I went to college in Lafayette, and the Corrida de Mardi Gras is amazing.
Yeah.
Essentially, you have people dressed up in costumes, although the costumes are very different. Signed issue, the House of Dance and Feathers that Mr. Ronald Lewis used to run mm-hmm. just reopened.
Yes.
And he passed away a couple years ago during COVID, but he has a collection, and now they're continuing that collection. He has a collection of Cajun costumes,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you can see the differences and similarities. But essentially, Cajun Mardi Gras is about going house to house on horseback to collect the ingredients to make a gumbo.
A communal gumbo,
I am overly simplifying this.
Yeah, but that's it.
If you ever get invited to go, just say yes and figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
It's the most amazing, crazy, chaotic, drunk people on horses.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Riding, chasing after chickens.
Yeah,
it's
right.
But that's Mardi Gras.
I think we're all a little bit crazy, but that's all right. It's
the way
crazy.
They celebrate it. It's really neat. I think the magazine this year, you guys, one of the things I love is that clearly there's this concerted effort to talk about Mardi Gras beyond.
Yeah.
You mentioned in the magazine something you and I have never talked about, and that's the Washington, D.C. Mardi Gras.
That's a big deal that
it
I
is.
Also have never seen in person. There's a wonderful exhibit at a library in Baton Rouge around the state capitol grounds celebrating their 75th anniversary, and that's the hardest ticket in town in D.C. to get invited to that ball, and it's, you know, all politicians and king and queen, of course, from Louisiana, and it's just a really big blowout.
Yeah, I lived in that area for 9 years and could never get an invitation.
No, it's hard.
I tried.
Yeah, no,
as a New Orleanian.
Don't feel bad.
I could never get an invitation. But it's a big deal.
It is.
They bring a lot. Again, the Lieutenant Governor, I think, has done a good job of trying to export stuff, product, you know, your magazine, all kinds of things there. The people that I know that have been, it's a lot of fun. They're, you know, it it's not a traditional parade like here, but it is a sought-after ticket there.
Oh, it is.
It is,
and there's an indoor
big deal.
Parade there. And,
right.
And nobody has anything to drink, from what I understand. Is that right, Mark? You're right.
Yeah. Some things we export really well.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as we wrap up, any last thoughts about Carnival this year?
Just I hope that the weather's good. We can never control that, and that it's safe, and people just have a good time. You know, it's just that's why we do this thing.
Yeah.
It's time we all become kids again, and I think I tell you this every year. I've always thought at some point, I'd get jaded and say, come on, enough. You're old. I'm in my 70s. Give it a rest. But, man, I get excited every year. I mean, you can't make this up. You know,
yeah.
It's a business for me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I hear the first police siren and hear a bass drum, go, here it is, man. Let's go get it. And
yep.
It just, I don't know, it just makes you feel good to be alive in New Orleans.
I totally agree. We are at the right on the cusp of the season where, from our house, we will hear the marching bands practicing.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I remember us practicing at Brother Martin, right?
Sure. And you have to get in shape, train just like a football team.
Right. People don't realize that, but you go practice in the streets, and we are right on the cusp of that. And one of the things I most love is my kids hear the drum and go running out the front door to see it.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's kind of the precursor to what you're talking about, hearing that first siren. I remember parade progress reports, right? And there's something about that.
Yep.
Tony Bonaguirre.
Yep, here comes the parade. Oh, man.
And the helicopters circling overhead.
Man.
And neither you nor I are particularly young anymore, but,
no, but
those memories stick with you, you know?
Do.
And they continue.
And we've got to make some new ones this year, right?
Yeah.
I'm planning on it.
I certainly appreciate you taking the time to visit with
my
me.
My pleasure.
Again, it is the 47th annual. Didn't miss a beat in COVID, although it was challenging, but it is the 47th edition of Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide. I will put a link to purchasing it on my website. I'll put a picture of the cover. You can certainly do that. If you're a Patreon member at the $10 level or higher, I will be shipping out a copy to you directly. If you are in town or you come to town, you can find it all over the place, grocery stores, corner stores, gosh, just about everywhere up and down Magazine Street, plenty of places in the French Quarter. You know, I like, even in this digital age, every year, Arthur's nice enough to hand me a copy, but we buy them and keep them in our backpack on the parade route. There's something about, while you're waiting for the parade, reading about that parade, right, and the throws and what's unique about it in the history.
Yeah, I think print is here to stay, maybe not as powerful of a source of media as it once was, but particularly something like Mardi Gras, which is so visual, I think you need more than a 2-inch screen to experience it, and you know, hope to keep it going a few more years.
Yeah. And it's a great keepsake. We have stacks of them. I love to look back. I love to leave them in the guest bedroom for people to see. Now we're getting serenaded by music, so that's nice. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras. Thanks to our sponsors, Travel Chasers, the Historic New Orleans Collection, and our Patreon supporters. You can find out more about them, as well as all of our on-air sponsors and partners, at our website, beyondbourbonst.com. Last but not least, I've mentioned it a couple times, but in addition to picking up Arthur's Mardi Gras Guide, be sure to pick up a copy of my travel guide called Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. It's available online at many local bookstores and from me directly. Again, you can check that out in the show notes. Arthur, you were gracious enough to put a little blurb about the book in your guide, and I certainly appreciate that.
Every word I said was true. It's the best I've seen.
It means a lot to me. And with that, we're going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.